This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the USDF's official podcast. I'm Chris Stafford. And on the show this week, we'll be hearing from Awards Committee Chair Peggy Klump, who will be giving us an overview of the All Breeds Awards. And later on in our education segment, Eliza Rom has a tip about serpentines. And in the Vet Connections, we continue our series on back pain in the dressage horse with Dr. Meyer. But first, the USDF would like to convey how saddened it is to report that Dr. Max Gawler, a 2004 Rumour Foundation USDF Hall of Fame inductee, passed away on May 13th at the age of 93. Dr. Max was a beloved dressage judge, the author of The Competitive Edge, Volumes 1, 2 and 3, and a historian. The USDF Connection magazine profiled Dr. Max in its November 2015 issue, and his Hall of Fame induction speech is published on the USDF Hall of Fame website. A link to that will be in the show notes accompanying this episode. Dr. Max will be greatly missed. And now our first guest this week is Peggy Klump, who is the US Dressage Federation's Awards Committee Chair, and she's here to talk about the USDF's All Breeds Awards program. Peggy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much.
Now, this is a position you've held for a number of years, isn't it?
Yes, actually, it's a volunteer job. I serve as one of the committee chairs of, in this case, the USDF Awards Committee offers a tremendous amount of a variety of awards programs to our USDF membership.
Well, let's start with a little explanation of that. Why don't you tell us what that program is and how it benefits our members, Peggy?
Okay, well, I have to first suggest that listeners would refer to the USDF member guide. It's available in hard copy as well as on the USDF website. On page 38, all of the details that anybody might like to have are fairly well explained, and it goes on for a number of pages. So, again, the first thing I would recommend, if anybody is really interested in the program and is unsure of what the rules are, would be to go to that page. And then, of course, secondarily, our members are always invited to call the USDF office and talk directly to one of the staff members at USDF, which will put you in the right direction. But basically, in summary, the USDF All Breeds Programs is a specific program designed to recognize the accomplishments of individual and specific breeds within the scope of the dressage community. Specifically, USDF offers members an opportunity for recognition parallel those are offered with the Attaquan USDF Horse of the Year Awards and the Year-End Awards. So there's many different categories that are available. And for anybody that happens to be listening, that their organization is not currently a member, we certainly encourage those breed organizations that might be interested to contact USDF. We vary from year to year, but approximately between 65 to 70 different breed organizations are a part of our program.
Well, that's huge, of course. Let's talk about membership of those organizations. If you have a horse that you want to declare for the awards program, just talk us through that, Peggy, and the eligibility.
Well, basically, you start, because it's a tiered program, you start with the basic overall requirements for the USDF Attaquan Horse of the Year year-end awards programs. And again, that's outlined in the member guide really clearly. But to summarize it and make it more related to an individual listening to this particular broadcast is that basically when you become a participating member of USDF as an owner and then as a rider, that makes you eligible when the horse is registered. The horse must have a lifetime registration in order to be eligible for Attaquan Horse of the Year and all of the Horse of the Year programs, which also then relates parallel to the All Breeds programs. So the really good news for a member is they're getting a big bang for their buck. by becoming a participating member. And then also, since their horse is already registered, by then declaring with USDF that they would like that horse to then have a duplicate, a possibility of awards, which is the Albreeds. And I'd like to be more specific here. I can use a couple of examples to keep it really easy. Myself, I have been an award winner with the American Hanoverian Society. Some individuals are with the American Arabian Horse Association. And the bottom line is it's very simple. Once you have joined as a participating member, the owner of the horse is a participating member, then your horse has its lifetime registration. That makes you eligible for all these different awards programs. It's very important that a member that would be interested checks the eligibility with the breed organization. I know it's very disappointing at the end of the year to recognize, oh my gosh, the rider was a member, but somehow the points didn't count or the scores didn't count because the owner wasn't a member. If you're not sure, we do invite you at all times, always, to check with USDF staff. Now, one thing I would like to point out as well that is important is that the first time you're going to go for an all-breed award, it's very important that your horse be declared for a particular breed. That declaration stays with the horse permanently unless you decide to change it.
And what about the time frame for declaring, for your eligible membership, those requirements, and for declaring, Peggy? Talk us through that.
Well, again, starts at 1 October for the competition year. So, for example, right now we're in the competition year 2016. So those 3 months, in a lot of areas that doesn't count a lot because they're not showing much because of the fall time frame with October, November. But in regions like myself, where we're in Southern California, we show all year long, just like in Florida. But the good news is once you've declared your eligibility for a particular breed and you're a current member, it starts. So if the horse is declared after the start of the competition year, all the scores earned during that year may be eligible for all breeds. But you must make sure that you get the declaration forms in by the 1st of August. And there is a late fee if you don't get those in a time frame towards the end of the show year. So, again, for all that detail, I think it would probably be better for individuals that have questions to consult the member guide or to call the USDF office directly.
And once they've declared their horse then, Peggy, how do they check that it has been declared and eligible?
USDF members can verify their horses that are declared for all breeds by logging into USDFscores.com, and they can go onto the website. And, of course, they can all certainly either email or call USDF. So any one of those three ways is a really good way to do it. And I do encourage members to do that as early as possible in the year. It's so disheartening to discover that you're end of the show year and all of a sudden the scores don't count because there was some glitch. So again, just to make sure of eligibility, please do log into usdfscores.com and or call the USDF office directly.
And then, of course, they want to follow the standings, won't they? They want to see how they're doing throughout the year. How do they do that?
Actually, that's one of the most exciting things that I can tell you over the last 6 to 10 years that's really happened wonderfully at USDF. A really totally new addition, of course, is the USDFscores.com, and I really do strongly recommend all USDF members check that particular website for USDF to verify their scores. Usually there's anywhere from maybe a 10 to 14 day lead time for the scores to show up. But it's also always a very good thing to do to check the scores because sometimes there are occasional errors. So again, something I would really recommend that people do at the end of the year, very critical that you check your scores at that time so that if there's anything missing, that there is time to allow for corrections as needed.
What if some of the standings, if they're missing information, as you suggest, what can a member do to check on that and make sure those standings are all current?
The very best possible recommendation I have is that if you have a copy of your test score, if you call the USDF office, have it with you to make sure that the standings are absolutely correct. Sometimes it can be just as simple as waiting a few days until the preliminary standings are posted. Just remember that you must have the final information to USDF for the standing sport at any one particular show year must be at USDF office this year by October 15th. So again, I strongly recommend that all members do check their records a number of times in the September, early October timeframe.
And then, of course, there's the exciting part of all this, coming towards the awards themselves. Talk us through that, where members can expect to receive them, because it's quite the occasion, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We do recognize the award winners for first and second place in all breeds divisions within this salute gala. And usually in the end of October, first part of November, when the information is going out and people are deciding to go to the convention, they can then sign up for the gala. And I really do recommend people do that if they're planning on coming to get their awards at the awards banquet, to do it as early as possible, because oftentimes the gala does completely sell out and there's no tickets available at the door. Additionally, you must submit your photograph and your information about your award in terms of getting it in the Connections magazine. So that's really exciting that people get to see their picture and get recognition on a national basis for their accomplishments at a particular level.
And for those members who are unable to attend the gala, how long after the gala can they expect to wait to receive their award through the mail?
So anytime after the first of the year is pretty normal. In my personal case, I've always had them come fairly early, which is always really nice, closer to the year that you want them in, at the very least. If you certainly haven't got them within the first 6 weeks of the year, I would definitely give the USDF staff a call and say, well, was there an issue with the mail, or are they missing somewhere?
And who is their person of contact, the liaison at the USDF for this program, Peggy?
That would be Kristen Brown. You can contact her directly. Christina Firth is another really good person that you can speak to if Kristen doesn't happen to be available.
And are there any other points that you'd like to raise that members should be aware of?
I guess the most important one is that, you know, USDF is pretty great with our awards program. It's a pretty dynamic and a broad scope program. So individual breeds get to determine for their breed or organization which of the awards and which of the divisions they'd like to support. Some support more of the divisions than other breeds. So again, to be sure you're really clear, you need to consult the individual listings for that breed. And the really good news, for the first time ever in 2016, the Vintage Cup has now been divided into two different divisions. There's a separate award division for professionals, as well as for the adult amateur Vintage Cup winners. I'm sure hoping that this information has been helpful to our membership and for those that are interested in the All Breeds Awards program.
And of course, members or any listeners can find out more about this program by going to the website at usdf.org and following the link there. Peggy, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program and explaining the program to us.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be able to get the information out to our members.
And our next guest in the education segment here this week is USDF certified instructor Eliza Rom, who is here to offer some tips on how to ride the serpentine. Eliza, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we're going to be talking about serpentines, depending where you are in the world, and how to best execute them, because eventually you're going to face them. There are lots of tips, I think, to get them as perfect as they can be. Where would you like to start?
Well, I'm a big fan of serpentines. I use a lot of serpentines in my training. I think they're a very, very helpful exercise. There are a lot of different variations on how you can ride them, but in general, they're always very useful for helping with suppleness, mostly lateral suppleness, left to right, because of the change of direction. And the most traditional serpentine that you think of is a three-loop serpentine, the width of the whole arena, so three half 20-meter circles, essentially. But then there are very many variations. You can do a three-loop, you could do a four-loop, you could do a six-loop, you could do an eight-loop serpentine in the whole arena. And a lot of what people think of is the exercise from training level test 3 that's in our tests now, of the sort of flattened serpentine along the wall where you go from the corner into X and then back to the other corner. So there are many different types of serpentines or different variations on the serpentine, but we're almost always using it to increase suppleness, lateral suppleness, and also hopefully a little bit better connection to your outside rein in each direction. So I start with my young horses using a fairly simple serpentine, like a three-loop serpentine. When they have begun to understand a little bit of bending on a 20-meter circle. And the other variation that you can do within a, let's say, a three-loop serpentine is you can make it a little bit more like ribbon candy, you know, a little bit back on itself so that it's quite curvy, the line. You can flatten it a little bit with a younger horse that doesn't understand bending so much, or you can even make it a little bit more like square turns if you're trying to focus a bit more on the steering aspect or in helping a horse to bring their shoulders up and around and not fall too much through your outside aids. So I think serpentines are very good for a variety of things.
So how would you recommend people start then, their first attempts at the serpentine?
So one of the most important things is really understanding where exactly in the arena you're going. So understanding the geometry of the serpentine is very important. And with a three-loop serpentine, the width of the arena, A to C, most people make the mistake of riding straight across from B to P and then straight across S to R or vice versa. And you think of it as three 20-meter circles that you're riding a half of a 20-meter circle each. So I would recommend starting with just the 20-meter circle. So let's say you're starting with the 20-meter circle at A, really understanding where that 20-meter circle goes. It does not go in the corners. It goes 2 meters beyond L, the imaginary letter between P and V, so 2 meters more towards X past L. So really understanding that 20-meter circle geometry, getting the horse to bend around your inside leg at the girth, finding a nice steady connection with the outside rein, and then practicing just the first turn, what would be the first two loops of the 20-meter circle. You can go back and forth with a figure eight. So a 20-meter circle, let's imagine we're doing a 20-meter circle left at A. We've found a nice bend there. We've gone around a couple times. Now we're going to cross over the center line 2 meters beyond L, change our posting diagonal, change the bend to the right, and now we're on a 20-meter circle that's centered at E and B around X. And then you have to really know where that 20-meter circle goes. It stays 2 meters inside of L and 2 meters inside of I, which, again, most people just go all the way out to that line, and then it's not a very correct circle anymore. So I start with the younger horses or a greener rider with just that, which is a figure eight, 20-meter circle at A, over to a 20-meter circle the other direction around X. And then when that feels good, then you can do the three-loop serpentine. And I think when people understand exactly where it goes, then you start to feel the benefit of it, because if you're really clear on where the geometry is, you really are putting your horse on the aids and between your aids, meaning between your left and right aids. So that would be the exercise that I would start with. And when that feels good, then riding three loops from A to C or from C to A. And also the exercise from training level test 3 is a good one, from the corner letter into X and then back out to the corner letter. Again, you can vary that. You could make it a bit more what they call a broken line, which is really just a steering exercise, sort of like two sides of a triangle. And that is very helpful with a really young horse who is just learning steering and they don't understand bending yet. But then if you want to think of it truly as a serpentine, then you picture your arc curving with bend to the inside at the beginning, bend the other direction as you travel through X in a very arced line, and then bending back the other direction as you travel back to the corner letter and keeping that bend into and through the corner. So those are the easiest exercises to start with. I won't say that they're easy to ride really correctly, but they're the easiest to start with.
All right. And now what else should people be thinking of, you know, in terms of the overall picture as they develop it and strengthen the movements?
Now, I think looking ahead and planning your trajectory of your geometry is always very helpful. And if, as you make it more difficult on yourself, let's say you're going to ride a four-loop serpentine or a five-loop serpentine, then you have to really understand where those loops are going to fall in the arena, because a lot of times I'll ask someone, okay, ride a four-loop serpentine, and the first three loops are too big, and then they have to squash one last little loop in before the end of the arena. So understanding the trajectory will help you to keep the change of bend smooth so that your horse doesn't feel like they're pulled to the new inside direction. I often tell people, if they're in rising trot, to change their posting diagonal slightly before crossing the center line. Again, if we're imagining that we're on a three-loop serpentine, you're going to change your posting diagonal just before crossing the center line, and also probably shorten your new inside rein just a little, just one finger's width or maybe 1 inch, so that as you go to the new direction and you apply your new inside bending aid, you don't feel the need to pull back with the inside hand.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. Anything else that you would like to recommend in the perfect execution of the serpentine, Eliza?
Well, the only other thing I would add is that a serpentine can also be, we've talked about it mostly as a lateral suppling exercise, but it can be a good exercise to use to both test and help your longitudinal suppleness. So when your horse has begun to understand stretching down on a 20-meter circle, it's a good exercise to use to stretch them down and ride a serpentine line. But that certainly is something to do once they understand the serpentine, once the rider understands the serpentine, and once they understand at least the basic concept of stretching down on a regular 20-meter circle. But I often use serpentine lines in the beginning of the ride and at the end of the ride to stretch my horses down farther into a longer contact so that they really lift and swing in their backs, and you can change direction and check on the ability to stretch both directions.
Very good advice. Well, thank you very much indeed for that, Eliza. Learn more about the serpentine here on the podcast to find out how to execute it perfectly. We appreciate you taking the time to come on the program. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
And now for part two of a three-part series that was recorded at the Adequan USDF Annual Conventions Education Session entitled The Science and Treatment of Back Lameness, we'll hear from Dr. Meyer of the Meyer Equine Clinic in Rochester, New Hampshire, on back pain in the dressage horse.
Okay, a short discussion about physiologic versus structural imaging. Structural imaging is like the structure of this building, okay? It has a structure. It doesn't have a function except what we do in here. We're the physiologic aspect of that, you know? We're a living body moving, and the same thing with imaging. I can take a picture of this building and see that. If I do an infrared picture, then I'm seeing the physiologic imaging. I'm being able to see all of you in here. So that's the difference with that. Now, sometimes there's a bit of overlap on that. I can interpret the x-rays and see some physiologic function there. I can tell whether there's a periosteal reaction, the type of reaction that's in there. And with physiologic imaging, I can see some structure there. But usually the physiologic imaging is for diagnosing a regional area, and then we follow up with structural imaging to see if there's anything abnormal. That would be the x-rays, the MRI, the ultrasound. I'd have to say, with back lamenesses, the best modality that I've had, and almost everything I get is referral from other veterinarians, is the nuclear medicine. It's also taught me an awful lot about what's going on there. I can look at the entire back with nuclear medicine. So I inject them with a radioisotope, technetium-99 usually, and then it goes throughout the body. And there are two phases to it, and we utilize both phases. The first one is if I hit my thumb with a hammer, it's going to get inflamed and red and have more blood supply going to it. If I have technetium in there, I'm going to be able to see that on a scan, and it's going to show me that there is an increased uptake there. I have more of a moderate intense uptake, and both these are affected on the, these. This is a kind of a skyline view looking down on the horse, and you can see that one sacroiliac joint has increased uptake, the other one is more diffuse. It's asymmetrical, so that to me is an important aspect. We also see increased dorsal spinous process uptakes in the spinal cord, so that's what we're seeing from the lateral views. The last thing we're seeing is on the ribs here, you see increased uptake on the on two of the ribs. So these are fractured ribs. And that's certainly, if anybody ever had a fractured rib, you know, that's painful. Yep. I've had several. Dealing with horses, I think that goes kind of goes along with that. But so this horse has three different areas that are all significant. So which one is the most important? The ribs are probably going to heal. That's going to do okay. I can inject the sacroiliac joint, and when you inject the sacroiliac, you have to go with a 10-inch needle. It's a long needle. You curve it, and it goes around that ilium down into the joint. So if you're, that's how whoever is doing the injections, and you know, it's like most things, you should have done a few of those before you embark on that. It's also a little dangerous, so you have to be a little careful doing that too. So, and then lastly, we can take X-rays of that dorsal spinous process. But there are other things that you can also give. Anti-inflammatories, again, we talked about those. Bisphosphonates. Bisphosphonates, there's Tildren and Osphos. I'm not a big, it's just personal preference, I'm not a big fan of Tildren. I think the research was not as good as the Osphos. I know the study in Osphos, and that was shown that in hawks it is very beneficial. But anytime you have a bone lysis, it's beneficial. Same thing, I mean, in a lot of people, we have osteoporosis, and bisphosphonates are used commonly for people. But there are potential side effects, so you do have to be a little careful. It can predispose to fractures. I haven't seen a lot of that in horses. I've heard some anecdotal, occasional reports. I think, like most things, you don't want to overdo those things. I think also Ataquan. I put that in the anti-inflammatory category, along with steroids. I think steroids are a very good product. I used to think, well, am I just making money on steroids here? Because you give a lot, and I don't believe in a prophylactically steroid injections. I think that, you know, I see a lot of people that say, well, let's give, you know, inject the hawks prophylactically. I don't think it's warranted. I think you should have disease there and be treating that. I also think injections, I tell people, not sooner than every 3 months. Because I think you can have a steroid arthropathy, so it can cause some damage to that. So I'd be a little careful with overuse of steroids. Now, on the other hand, about 5-6 years ago, I went in and I could barely raise this arm up, and I had a fibrosing capsulitis on my shoulder, and extremely painful. I didn't realize how painful. I think it's because grabbing ears on horses and then going up in the air and not letting go. You know, I've learned to let go, let younger people do that type of thing. The orthopod said, well, you can if you just go for a while, it's probably going to get better. I said, I can't. I have to do surgery tomorrow. I said, go ahead and inject it. He injected it, and within a week, 10 days, it was tremendous. I was back doing all the surgery I needed to do. So I think that there are products that are out there and that can be beneficial. You just have to be careful. And it's up. It's like the lady over here. I think that was such a good question. You know, is it all right to give the Ataquan once a week? I think that, you know, we do vary some of our treatments on things. And I will vary that, too, tremendously, like shockwave. We'll get into that a little bit. Shockwave was demonstrated to be effective every 7 to 10 days. I stretch it out to a month, because I think I'm overselling it if I do it every 7 to 10. I don't have a problem doing that, but I think that you know, not all the clientele can afford that, so I'm trying to provide something that's palatable to your pocketbook and also therapeutic. Counter-irritation, treatment with counter-irritation, I want to touch on that. You know, when we're putting, when you put a topical on the horse, not an anti-inflammatory, because there's Surpass, you've probably heard that, and if you have an area that's inflamed, you can rub that on. If you rub it in vigorously, it's going to be absorbed. And it'll also be absorbed into your hand, too, if you don't wear gloves. So if you have arthritis, I wouldn't wear gloves. I can't say that, can I? I just did. But it is a approved product. It's the same product. But topicals, when you put Bengay on, or if you're bold enough to put a horse liniment on or something, be careful because it can burn. And even anti-inflammatories like DMSO, it can burn too. But if you know that there's an area that's painful and you want to see if counter-irritant will help, then that's what I would try. It's cheap and easy and relatively safe. What it does is it produces an irritation that stimulates the nerves on the skin that, and oftentimes feels good. You know, it's that warming sensation. But it takes the perception of those painful fibers in deeper away. Much the same as, you know, if I inject a stifle with iodine, it does the same thing. You create another area of inflammation, and it is effective. I can take the racehorse that's going down the track crooked and straighten them out by doing that. So I think there's a place for counter-irritation, but I don't believe it heals anything. And you're not putting in there and thinking that it's going to really heal the problem. So counter-irritation will work in certain instances, and that's where you use your veterinarian to determine which they are. And I think it can help in the back, too.
And our thanks again to Dr. Meyer, and we'll be concluding this series on next week's episode. The USDF would like to remind its members to take advantage of the many member perks offered through the USDF Member Perks Program, which include the educational sites dressageclinic.com, dressagemeetingonline.com, and dressagetrainingonline.com. Our retail partners are Premier Equestrian, farmvet.com, Dressage Extensions, and, of course, the USDF's own store. The service partners are US Rider and MyDressageStats.com. For more information, you can check out everything online by following the link in the show notes accompanying this episode or clicking on the membership tab, which you'll find on the front page of the USDF website. And that's it for this week's episode. Remember, you can always download this episode to any mobile device directly from the iTunes podcast store and listen to the show on the go. And there's a link on the front page of the USDF website. And whilst you're there, you can catch up with all the latest news and educational resources at eTrack and the latest news on the front page, and also via our social media channels. Just look for USDF. Until next week, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.